Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello one and all, and welcome to After the Checkered Flag, my F1 special series here on the Behind the Glass podcast. I am joined once again by my special guest, Paul Wallace from Sucastle, London.
When are you going to intro that as our special After the Checkered Flag?
Still gunning for co-host position, which I refuse to give him. I don't really know why, but it's fun to string them along. We've made it all the way here to the half point of the 2021 F1 season.
I know.
Time flies when you're having fun.
We've been having a lot of fun.
And today is the most pressure I have personally felt in the build-up to and after the Checkered Flag recording.
Well, I mean, not only have we given it an additional 24 hours, this was probably, should we go and say, the best Grand Prix of the season so far? How do we compare?
Every race, we'd be like, it's just the best race we've seen in 10 years. But we obviously had the very dramatic situation at Silverstone a few weeks ago, which sparked a lot of interest. That episode did incredibly well. So huge thanks to all of you that have been enjoying the After the Checkered Flag series and have been following the sort of F1 season through our eyes, maybe, or with our words. I don't know how you describe it. But anyway, so yeah, it spiked interest. And then since the insane Hungarian Grand Prix race on Sunday, I've received so many messages. Yeah. Like, when's After the Checkered Flag coming out? And I'm like, oh my God, there's a load of pressure.
So have I, which actually means that I should be co-host.
Well, they'll know that you're going to be guesting. You know, they probably would have realised he's a regular guest. Yeah, he'll be here. But, so sorry that this is coming to you slightly later than usual. It was actually my birthday.
Well, happy birthday, Sam. I remembered it for the first time in a long time.
I think first time ever, actually. I've known you for about 6 or 7 years now. And for the first time ever, you remember my birthday. But I think only because I told you we won't be recording on Monday. It's my birthday.
You actually told me every day for 2 weeks in the build-up to your birthday, so I couldn't really not remember.
It would have been awkward. So the episode's coming with you a little bit later. But anyway, we are here to analyse, to discuss, to dissect an insane Hungarian Grand Prix, which I was going to come out and say it, proved my calls for reverse grid races was correct. I mean, I kind of think that maybe Ross Brawn and Stefano Domenicali went, let's just try this somehow. Let's just Bottas, can you just take everyone out and we'll do a reverse grid race? I mean, have you recovered is my question.
Have I recovered? I've had time to collect my thoughts. Have I recovered? Probably not, because everything was still going on so far after the race actually finished. So I feel like it's actually quite appropriate that we've left a little bit of breathing space, because there was always an opportunity for another driver to get disqualified.
I was a nervous ball of energy after that race. I mean, throughout that race, and then it took me about 2 or 3 hours to calm down from the insanity that was the Hungarian Grand Prix. And you know what's funny is in the build up to the race, you know, Tony on the WhatsApp chat was giving it all that, which always frustrates me and we often refer to on this show. But Hungary's one of those weird Grand Prix that some years we get really dull processions that you really, you know, like, who cares? Some years we get races like we had this last weekend that are just mental. I mean, go back to Button's first Grand Prix victory. Go back to the Ricciardo year. Like, I mean, there's been so many incredible races and some boring ones and you never quite know what to expect, but it really delivered for the 2021 season. I almost don't know where to begin.
You say that we should have reverse grids. I say we should just drop a bunch of water on the track before the formation lap, and the teams have to work out whether the track's going to dry in time, what tyres to start on, so that there is this air of mystery about the start, because fundamentally that's where everything started for this Grand Prix. It was obviously pouring with rain in the morning. It meant that the track really didn't dry. But then it was almost perfect timing. We've had a couple of races where there's a chance of rain and it's not come. And then this time it was kind of like unexpected because the Saturday was so warm and everyone was worried actually that the tyres aren't going to last what Pirelli was saying they were going to last. And then we had this rain almost come out of nowhere. But as the sort of flag dropped, the sun came out and it completely threw everyone. No one was prepared for it. Definitely not Bottas.
Yeah. Or was he?
Oh, many conspiracy theories about Toto Wolff.
We love a conspiracy theory on the show.
So for me, that's where I got the excitement from. The fact is that the teams could not prepare or could not strategize for what actually happened.
That was exactly it. I think, you know, you're right that we always, I mean, wet races can be so exciting, but they can also be a bit of a non-event sometimes, you know, especially with the push towards safety. We often see safety cars or long delays. And this was kind of like that almost perfect storm, pun intended, of a huge downpour all morning that sort of washed away any kind of rubber or that, you know, been laid into the tarmac over the race weekend. So that let this very greasy surface, unknown conditions, unknown situation, but then also dried out very quickly, but left us with this fascinating race. I was worried once it got dry. I was like, oh, well, that's that. But we still had this unbelievable race. And so I don't really know how to attack it, but let's just dive
in. Really try. Yeah. And if we miss anything out, we apologize.
We'll miss out a lot for sure. And there was just so much going on that I know I'm going to forget things.
Yeah.
But that opening lap, so yes, we had this grid order that I don't think necessarily hinted at an epic race. Obviously, Mercedes locking out the front row. It's a track that historically Hamilton, at least, has performed very well at. And Mercedes have... I mean, Red Bull haven't always been that strong and hungry.
We've just breezed over the Saturday qualifying with Lewis backing the pack.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
are we going to just... Should we just go straight into the race?
Yeah. Okay. As always, I think when it's a sprint race... sprint weekend, we'll talk about the other. Fine. But let's just concentrate on the race. It's too much to get into. But yeah, we end up with this, you know, Mercedes front row lockout, Max and P3, and then, you know, a smattering of interesting midfield runners. But it wasn't like, this is going to be epic. It could have been quite dull.
Yeah.
And then with the rain, in we go into turn one. And Bottas, I mean, the man has at least given us things to talk about this year. You know what I mean? Like, he might not be having the best performances of his life. He might be on his way out of that team, but he's giving us things to talk about every time we sit down to do an after the checkered flag episode.
Yeah, there was two results to what he did on lap one, turn one. Is either he has lost his Mercedes seat based on that, or he's just secured his Mercedes seat.
Because, of course, I know everyone listening has watched and knows exactly what's happened, but yes, he ploughed into essentially the whole field, or at least the important part of the field. Yeah. Unfortunately, taking out Lando Norris, which I felt a bit, you know, gutting, but these things happen. And then essentially the two Red Bulls, not quite hard enough, I think Toto would have said, like, should have gone more speed. But, you know, to be fair, he's come out, he's put his hands up, he's apologised. He just totally misjudged it. And we have seen that at 1,000 races all through years. If that was a Tsunoda, if that was a Mazepin or whatever, there wouldn't have been maybe quite so much of a conspiracy. Like, it was just one of those, you're like, Bottas.
It really reminded me of that Singapore year where it rained. It
was And the two Ferraris took each other out?
The two Ferraris took each other out, which then in turn took Verstappen out.
I remember.
And Lewis just sailed onto... It was almost as though, how can he avoid that with everything that had happened so close behind him? And it was basically that again, because, well, there were so many elements to what was happening, because once Bottas had nudged Norris into the Red Bulls and then Ferraris were trying to avoid everyone, it was then everyone else behind just doing their best to try and avoid what was happening in front, which in turn sparked some more accidents.
Well, I mean, you know, and I say if it was somebody else, there wouldn't be some conspiracy theories. There was somebody else, Stroll. I mean, Stroll was the second bulldozer. You know, you had Bottas taking out the front runners.
Stroll
was like, you know, well, you know, the upper midfield needed a bit of a knock as well. So we lost poor Charlie Leclerc. Danny Ricciardo, who at one point looked like he was going to be flying through into second or third or something, and potentially was going to have this race that we wanted, and instead we saw a very depressing race for
everyone is talking about how Alonso fought for Ocon's win. Maybe Stroll fought for Vettel's podium. He was like, do you know what?
Ultimate team player.
I'm just going to take everyone out.
I mean, love you, Seb. Go, you go. Well, it was opportunistic, but I think Nico Rosberg summed it up very well. It was luck that basically ended up with Ocon and Vettel, finding their way through the melee. I mean, yes, their positioning was good, maybe they saw what was going on and took some decisive decisions, but essentially they were in the right place at the right time. They didn't get hit because Norris, Leclerc, Ricciardo, they were all passengers. Nothing bad on their side. They were doing very well. And I think you saw that in Leclerc's body language, how frustrated it was, because I think he saw things opening up and
this is a massive opportunity.
Yeah, I've avoided that huge crash. Yeah. I'm away here. And then bang, it's absolutely taken out by the torpedo.
Just touching on Nico Rosberg there, because I had a few messages in the build-up saying, just FYI, Nico's commentating, as if it was going to be a classic Nico YouTube video where he's, oh my God, Lewis's career is over, all of this stuff. The input that he had and the perspective that he gave being a modern Formula One driver throughout that race was amazing. Brilliant. I loved having him in there with
the first Crofton. Five laps, I was like, oh, shut up. Like, what are you on about? He was epic.
He was in all of the drivers' heads.
And the thing is that, as you say, you're so right, modern Formula One driver, that's a big part, because bless the Sky F1 team, they're fantastic. I am a Sky F1 watcher rather than a Channel 4 watcher. Martin Brundle, mate, you are a brilliant broadcaster, but you haven't driven a Formula One car in anger for 30 years. So when you're talking about certain things, it's not the same.
It's not relevant.
I know he's done a lot of filming, but it's not the same. Karun Chandhok, unfortunately, you didn't have a competitive career in Formula. You know, all these guys, super talented at what they do, but they don't have the ability to, as you say, know what the guys on track are like in competition, how they, like, his references about Hamilton were genius. Yeah. He's like, oh, he can still win this race.
Yeah.
And Crofty's like, oh, you're a bit cocky. Why are you saying that? He's like, no, I was his teammate. Like, Hamilton can still win this race. Like, I'm telling you right now. And you're right. There's little tidbits and then that little information of how they're going about stuff and his natural ability to jump in, to dive in, to say, oh, Crofty, let me take this. Let me talk you through what's going on here. It was so interesting. And I think he built with confidence as the race went on and gave a bit of spice. He did still drop some Nico Rosberg YouTube bombs. You know? But you're right. And I say, I don't want to knock the others. I think Karun does an amazing job on the Sky Pad these days. Brundle is arguably one of the best commentators in the game.
It's iconic voice.
Iconic voice. He's becoming a Murray Walker and he is still super, super good. But to have someone like Rosberg, because Jensen Button has been good in his punditry, but I don't think he's given that insight yet. He hasn't been able to, maybe they haven't put him in the commentary booth. You know, he hasn't really had that chance to exploit all of his knowledge and everything that he learned.
I think he just stitched the relationship between what goes on between the strategists and the pit crew and the driver and almost blasted everything together to give us the closest perspective we could have whilst watching a race of what it's like to be a Formula One driver.
You're so right. Okay, so we had this huge incident, turn one, madness, everyone gets taken out. Verstappen, unbelievably lucky to not really be out of the race at turn one.
Yeah.
And my immediate thought was, you know, they've got to keep him going somehow because this is clearly going to be a mental race. They just got to somehow get him out there.
He had nothing
to lose
at that point.
Nothing to lose, right?
World Championship.
Skip a few laps skip the red flag period when we're coming back out for the restart and we had that bizarre moment of Hamilton being the only car to take to the grid for that restart whilst everyone comes in for, at the time, dry tyres, wasn't it?
Which looked like a huge strategic mistake from Mercedes.
I'm going to come back to you because you've got a great... Well, you figured out something. I don't know if you figured it out, but you learned.
Honestly, I've not actually seen it anywhere.
Okay, I'm going to come back to it. Because how exciting was that moment where they were coming around and was it Georgie Russell who came on being like, everyone's going in.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to pick. Everyone's going to pick.
Yeah, it's dry.
Lewis was like, it's dry.
Yeah.
And you were like, what's going to happen? Like, this is mad. They're all going to come in. But then we just see Hamilton's the only car. And my thing was, what would they have done if Hamilton had also come in? Firstly, talk about what you learned as to why they didn't bring Hamilton in.
So a friend of mine actually said this, and I don't know what his source was, but basically, because of where Mercedes' garage position is, which is obviously the first garage, he would have come in to change the tyres for slicks, which I believe is probably what they would have wanted to do. But the fact, because it was a formation lap, everyone was so close behind, they wouldn't have been able to release him until the back of the pack, therefore starting P14 and four or P15, or literally at the back of the pack, which would have completely, well, ruin his race? Probably. I don't know whether that was the right thing to do, because he eventually ended up, because he came in and pitted on the next lap at the back of the pack, but maybe that gave him a better chance.
So yeah, they were thinking that if they brought him in for that change, they would have been stuck there because of all the traffic. The whole entire rest of the field were coming through the pit lane also too, and that's what they predicted. He would have been waiting in his pit box to not crash, essentially, for an unsafe release.
Yeah.
And so really, the outcome was the same. He ended up at the back either way, but I think there was the chance that he could try and build some kind of gap and maybe slot in a bit better. No one really knew, but that was... And it made sense. And actually, it's also come out that Michael Massey was asked, well, what would have happened if Hamilton had come in as well and no cars had lined up? He said, we would have still done the procedure, so the lights would have gone out. Yeah, would have gone out. And then the pit lane would have gone green straight away. So I was like, that's interesting. And of course, at this point, it was Russell who thought, well, I'm not going to sit in this queue. Which was a sort of, I don't know if it was bizarre or genius. I can't work it out. I guess he realized.
It looked illegal.
Coming out of his pit box, right, there was already a queue at the end of the pit lane and Williams right at the end. So he couldn't rejoin the pit lane. And I think he knew if he stayed where he was, no one was going to let him in.
Yeah.
No one's going to go, oh, after you, mate. It's not like a T-junction operator. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So I think he sort of made that conscious decision of, right, well, I'm just going to go to the front and I'll just give the places back if they tell me to. But it did have this bizarre moment where coming out, oh my God, George Russell, how's he done it? And look, hey, great result for Williams.
Yeah.
We're walking away with, on the day, 8th and 9th, which ended up being 7th and 8th, right? I really feel for your mate,
Latifi
right now, because... There is no talk of Latifi right now. No. It's all about Russell gets his first points. It's all this struggle with Williams. Latifi beat him. Latifi's got more points. Latifi was running in third competitively for like 25 laps. I mean, the guy's a bloody genius.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Russell did come on the radio and did that call saying, you know, prioritise Nikola, whatever we've got to do, like make sure we're scoring maximum points for the team. He had to do that. And we've spoken about before the weird, not unlikability factor of Russell, but it's something that you just struggle to really engage with him.
There's a slight disconnect.
And at that point, you know, you're like, oh, you should be going, oh, yes, what a guy. But I was a bit like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Kiss
off. Yeah, as if it's a case of, look, I'm going to assume, as is everyone, I'm number one driver. But, you know, let's prioritise Latifi.
Yeah, give him a chance. You know, he's put in a good effort. Like, I was like, shut up. Like,
yeah. But almost like when Lewis was following Lando at the Austrian Grand Prix and then overtook him. I was like, what a great driver.
Even though I just overtook him.
Yeah.
But either, no matter what, great to see Williams get some points.
And also you can see how much it means to them. The amount of... I suppose social media coverage that those guys have given off the back of the performance shows just how much it means to the team. You could see how much it means to George with his post-race interview. And collectively, I think there's no one that loves Formula One or watches Formula One that doesn't want to see Williams scoring points, given the history of the team, the sort of personnel that have been involved with it over the years. So to see them in the top 10 was actually awesome.
And it's felt like it's been coming, right?
Yeah,
Felt like it's been coming.
The last couple of years, you've seen the car be fully off the pace and almost be like, what's the point in running? But this year, especially, I think it's definitely a long time coming and cool to see.
Someone, though, that so nearly finished in a point scoring position, or at times was running in a point, which I just have to dwell on, Mick Schumacher. Because we're not going to... And now we're there at the bottom end of the field. I mean, this is exactly what that guy needs to do. And look, I've said before, I don't think he's had the most convincing rise to the top, but now he's there.
Oh, as in the top, as in Formula One.
You know, it took a couple of years, you know, Haas has been the top. He's made it, the pinnacle. But at a circuit where his dad was so successful, that, you know, as the weekend they announced the Schumacher documentary on Netflix, all this stuff like that. And okay, he's still been having some mistakes, making some issues here and there, but he finally got his chance to, well, get his elbows out and race some of the top guys and get some screen time. And boy, did he do a good job.
I was going to say, he did not just almost like, here's the position, ever.
He really fought hard, maybe sometimes a little too hard. Like, you know, he was aggressive, but he's a rookie.
Mick, that car is pretty much undrivable. Yeah, yeah. Please don't drive it to the limit.
It was exactly that. You know, sometimes with the Verstappen, I was like, he's going to take him out. But, you know, good on him. Like, he needed to do that, and he kept it on the track. He kept it clean, okay? And he was fighting for points, which, you know, that Haas car should never be anywhere near this season. So I was really happy he had that moment, because it's moments like this that we've seen with the likes of Bianchi or the likes of Alonso back at Minardi or the likes of Russell at Williams, where sometimes they outperform the car or show their ability. And that was Mick's first time to do that so far. And I think it was impressive.
I think the whole weekend, or especially the race, shone a light on so many drivers that get overlooked. Everyone in Formula One is talented and very, very fast. And what we saw with a little bit of the reverse grid is, and obviously Verstappen's car, which he came out and said was pretty much undrivable with all of the damage, it kind of put everyone at a bit more of a level playing field. So you really got to see the driver's skill and racecraft rather than just smoke around in a Mercedes AMG because it's the fastest or whatever, and just be like, he's won again because he's got the fastest car.
Well, the thing is, right, it did also show up the fundamental flaw in Formula One as it is, which the cars could not pass easily. They could pass, but not pass easily.
It's one of the biggest frustration is when you hear on the team radio the driver who is following and gaining and getting into a position to overtake saying, I can't follow close enough.
And this is that, you know, we're having this huge rule change for next year, which, you know, I think personnel within Formula One are a little skeptical about, hopeful but skeptical, but should make this opportunity, you know, following cars, battling with cars, easier and better. What Hungary really showed is we're right at the end now of this old formula, and it's a real issue.
It's just starting to get good.
Yeah, lol. But it really showed up. You know, we'll come back to this obviously, but Vettel and Ocon was a prime example of that, where you would have to say that Vettel was the quicker driver, or had the potential to be quicker. He stayed the entire race a second and a half, which shows you have a pace advantage because your car will be in such turbulent air at that point. So, but the fact he couldn't catch an overtake or couldn't pass, and all throughout the field, you know, we did not see a lot of overtakes during this race. DRS helped a bit.
Not that much though.
But not that much.
It wasn't an advantage as such. It was about the lines coming out of the corners that you saw.
Well, and I'm going to try so hard not to get on the Hamilton hype train here, but essentially was the only person that managed to do any overtaking of any noty work. Like, it just overtook the whole field.
Non-Lewis fans will say, well, he came up.
He was in the best car. Doesn't matter.
At the back of the pack.
He's in the best car.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. He's in the best car. So, like, you know, like that's it. He's in the best car. But yeah, so you're right. We got the chance to see incredible defense, holding off pressure, like you know, being able to. It was a great show of skill, but a frustrating one where the result, I think, wasn't truly
reflective
of pace,
or
driver ability necessarily. But it gave us a great result. So I don't want to pick on that too much. Yeah. So yeah, let me just bring up the order because yes, Mick Schumacher I wanted to touch on. Seb Vettel we'll come back to further up the road. Daniel Ricciardo, to be fair, he was also carrying around a lot of damage, but I think there's an awful clip online of him climbing up the car at the end of the race. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, and he just sits basically hulled up over the
he hates it, doesn't
what's
he?
It called? The
Halo.
Halo, thank you. Looks like he's crying. Mm. Looks like he just looks miserable.
He must hate that car.
I think he hates that car. Mm. I think he hates that car. I think he's feeling a bit lost.
Yeah.
Really frustrating because I think he was quick during the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, he was right up there with Lando and I think he saw it as an opportunity and now he's gone backwards. Kimi Raikkonen getting a point. What a legend. So let's talk about Max. I mean, came away with a P9 after the Vettel disqualification. Yes.
I think they'll see that as...
damage limitation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he did what he needed to do. That car probably was undrivable. Probably most other people would have given up or complained.
And there was a moment where I think he was running in P12 or P11. And I think Nico or whoever was commentating was talking about whether they should pit him for another set of tyres. Is this the chart? And they didn't. They missed this window. And I kind of was like, are they just going to retire the car? It kind of felt sad if they were just going to retire the car and kind of cut their losses. But cool to see him stick at it.
Yeah, and they come away with 2 points.
Yeah.
You know, so from that point of view, it's good. And they needed to do that.
Yeah.
You know, for the championship, I think it would have been stupid of them to have retired that car. And yeah, so I think what I'm so interested by is to see what version of Max Verstappen comes out of this summer break. You know, he was riding such a wave. He was really on top form. His confidence was just, well, he was unbeatable. He was unbeatable. And then he's had this huge incident at Silverstone, which goes all through the media. He was raging in the press conference on Thursday, was it, when he said, I just do not want to talk about this anymore. Stop talking about it. You could see the frustration. And we've said that this is the potential weakness for Verstappen across a season is his ability, or, you know, his hot-headedness, which is what all great racers have had and do have. Hamilton had that era. Like, it's what drives them. You know, we've all seen it, and that's a part of what makes him great, but it's also a potential weakness.
Yeah.
So it'll be so interesting now that he's had another frustrating, unlucky race. Is he going to come out feeling like, the world's against me, I'm not destined to win this? Or is he going to be like, totally chill, let's go, crack on, car's quick.
I'd like to think that he's going to come back like that.
I hope so.
So do I.
There's some very loud car revving outside the studio right now. I don't quite know if it's coming across on microphones. I somehow doubt it. But if we look a bit distracted, or suddenly every now and again you hear...
It's a very loud V8.
It sounds like a really gargling way behind us. Anyway, so yeah, then we talked about Russell and Latifi. Yuki Tsunoda, I mean, P6, great for him. I think he'd be happy. And, well, the moment we have to talk about was Hamilton around the outside of turn four, was it?
Oh, it was epic.
I mean, so... I don't want to sound like a dick. I'm going to sound like a dick right now. But, you know, with Hamilton's charge through the field, I'm just sitting there going, this is Hamilton of old. Like, he's overtaken. No one else overtaken. Watch, I love this guy so much. And he caught up with Tsunoda, and you could tell that a DRS overtake wasn't going to be an easy thing. And the maestro that is Hamilton, when, okay, I'm not going to get him in DRS, not going to get in turn one or turn two, I've got to find somewhere else to overtake him. And this is what, we do see it with Verstappen's, we see it with Alonso's, we see it with Vettel's, we see it with other people. Where else am I going to get past? Not the, oh, well, I'm stuck now, which
I'll prepare myself drivers, for the next DRS zone.
He was like, I'll find somewhere else. And you saw him for a couple of laps, just sniffing around that turn four, going, okay, I forgot, I'm getting close. I texted the group to Tony, and I was like, he's going around turn four. He's going around the outside. And literally the next lap. And I was like, legend. Now, the thing is, of course, Tsunoda backed out. Course, Tsunoda went, okay, fine. You know, it's Hamilton. I'll let him go. It's not my fight for today.
Can you imagine if he clipped his rear wheel?
But this is the thing, okay? So, yes, he backed out. But Tsunoda's not a known entity, really, in Formula One. Like, you know, he's had a few
Lewis
mistakes here and there.
A lot of trust into
him. A lot of trust. Or was that like a lot of like, move,
because the point of view from Lewis's car was like, there is absolutely no room for him to hit the apex where he did. And then it's only until you see the other camera with the cars coming towards you that you really see Tsunoda just realizing that that corner is Lewis's.
Which is something that Alonso refused to do.
We've
got to come to. Gasly, I think, had a very quiet race in P5.
Very quiet.
Like, solid result for AlphaTauri in general.
Yeah.
Do you know the only team to score every single race so far this year?
Is AlphaTauri.
AlphaTauri.
Amazing.
Outrageous,
isn't
it?
White wheels.
It's the white wheels. So yeah, good solid result for them, but weirdly quiet. And he's the kind of guy that usually is there to get the big results on these days. Yeah. So... I think he was feeling a little frustrated towards the end, happy but frustrated. So then we come on to officially P4, P5 on the day, Fernando Alonso. Now, we've given old Jimmy Alfonso a hard time this year. Said that he came back just to sell T-shirts for Alpine. He was there for the old glory day, just to drive around at the back going, hello. But my good Lord, he turned up at Hungary.
It was so good.
I genuinely do not think any other driver in the field could have done what he did to Hamilton. I held him up for 10 laps. And I'll tell you why.
Go on. Because I think...
Go on. You go first.
I'm saying this based on F1 experience. Vettel.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact. a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I think Vettel would have bottled it sooner. Do you think? Because the Hamilton-Alonso story is so... It goes back so far.
Yeah.
And they keep talking, oh, yeah, we respect each other. I think they hate each other. I think they still hate each other. And Hungary, obviously, a big place for their story. You know, way back in 2007, huge drama at Hungary there. And that was really Alonso at his most game playing. And Alonso's come out to say, look, he was... holding up Hamilton for Ocon. Yeah. He knew that if Hamilton got straight through that victory, he was gone. But I am Verstappen. Yeah. Which was like, basically like going, I'm team Verstappen.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I hate Lewis. But genius of Alonso to have that foresight about the race victory. He knew that, I mean, I'm sure the team were helping him given that information, but also he goes, I'm the, what's called the backstop here. Like I'm the one protecting Ocon. Like, yeah, if Hamilton gets through me, that's it. We're not winning this race.
Guardian angel.
Thank you. And he fought so hard.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Classic Lewis after two times. Oh, he's pushing me off the train. He's dangerous. You did literally crash into Verstappen 2 weeks ago, mate. Which, you know, it's the part of Lewis that I've always struggled to kind of.
I think a lot of people do. I think there's Lewis fans that struggle, and I think there's Max fans that hate it.
And in the heat of the moment, it happens a lot with Lewis. You know, a bit of a complaint. And then he comes out after just being like, I'd have it no other way, man.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah.
Like, love.
Great battle, Alan.
Yeah. So it's quite frustrating. But fundamentally, it's heat of the moment racing. Yeah. You know,
it's
passionate.
It's the wheel-to-wheel racing that we want that most circuits we don't get. Either because of the car's disparity in performance or just DRS.
Yeah, you're so right. It's so wide or there's long straights between the corners. But a big reason I think it was Hamilton's head game. So I think Alonso was like, get back, little boy.
Yeah.
You're still that little rookie that turned up to that and ruined my life. Get back. You're not coming past. I don't care who you are. And I think Hamilton had that. Oh, it's Alonso. Like, he will bin me off into the
There was
like,
a different
gravel.
Mentality in Lewis's attack with the way that he tried to get round Alonso.
So with Tsunoda, he always had a little bit more speed going up the hill. But you're right. He turned in with the get out of here, Tsunoda. Yeah, yeah, and Tsunoda was like, okay, sorry, Lewis. Yeah. Whereas with Jimmy Alfonso, there was like, nah, bruv. We're both going to die
sure
before I let you in.
I'm sure he actually said it
like,
in that accent as well. Yeah. Nah, bruv. Nah,
you ain't coming around the outside of Jimmy. It was so, and for the climax of that race, because what I didn't want at that point, that final tire change, having the race that we'd had, I didn't want Lewis to just absolutely Breeze walk through. It. I wanted it to be, and when he got to Alonso and we had 10 laps of epic racing, I was like, yes, it felt like Formula One of old. And then, you know, long story short, finally the pressure got a bit too much to Alonso. He made a little mistake and threw Lewis went, which again shows how intense that battle must have been. Yeah. Because for Alonso, okay, fine, 40
could
years
have
old
been, it could have been tire performance as well.
Of course, you know, but they were pushing each other that hard, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was absolutely amazing to see. And then you see how quickly Lewis went past Sainz, like boom.
Oh my God. It wasn't just how fast he went past Sainz, but at the end of the race, the gap, I think, was about 15 seconds.
I'm going to have a look here. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was about 15 seconds.
Because I look back, because it was only a couple of laps. I'm pretty sure he had maybe 3 laps or 2.5 laps from going past Sainz to then trying to catch up with the...
You're right, because there was like an 8 second gap with like 4 laps to go or something like that. So
and to then get past Sainz and then 15 seconds is unbelievable.
So yeah, huge pace advantage. So well done, Alonso. And I still... don't like you.
Do you know what? I warmed to him because I obviously sit as a Lewis fan, but I'm not exclusively a Lewis fan, is what I'm trying to say. So I do have other favourite drivers within the grid and have other favourite cars. I almost prefer the McLaren team to the Mercedes team because of Lando and Ricciardo.
Yeah, yeah.
When Alonso came out and was in that post-race press conference, and they said, so, like, what did you make of Lewis complaining down? And he just said, hey, he always complains. He always commits. Like, as if to be like, do you not know who I am? Yeah, do you not know how many times I've raced him? He always complains.
There's always something wrong. Which is kind of true. But, you know, like, unless when he's winning. And
it's just tires.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so great to see. And then we get on to the top two, because it was the top two for the entire race, Ocon and Vettel. Now, I'm gonna be really horrible right now.
Oh no!
Because the thing is,
there are gonna be a lot of French.
Well, we can't change our tune. We have given Ocon a pretty hard time most of you know, the after the checkered flag series.
I normally give him a hard time because his legs are so skinny, though.
I know, but I think it's borderline bullying. So I'm going to stay away from that. Try and be nice to everyone and not go in on someone's looks. But anyway, all right, Paul Wallace. He's been fairly nondescript this season. He signed that mega contract with Alpine. He lucked into a couple of good results of once again being in the right place at the right time, not necessarily performance-wise. Alonso, a 40-year-old man who'd been away for the sport, but has caught up with his pace fairly quickly. And the sort of, not the frustration for me was, again, he was lucky on that first corner. Mm-hmm. Yes, great car position. He qualified well, so he was in the right place, but he was lucky to escape unscathed. And Vettel, as we saw, had the faster car. Now, what I will say for Ocon is he was able to handle that pressure for the entire race. The man has not won a single-seater class since 2013. That's nearly 10
Isn't
years.
It a decade of racing.
In Formula 3 or GP3 or whatever it was at that time. Like, he's not exactly been at the top of single-seaters for a while. And to be able to keep that pressure, to keep that focus with Vettel in a quicker, arguably much quicker Aston Martin right behind you for the entire race, that I applaud.
And on a very physically and mentally taxing circuit.
For sure.
He came out and said it, didn't he?
He said,
There's no real relaxation. Like in Baku, you have a couple of straights where you can probably not have to concentrate as much. Whereas in this, the straights aren't even that long. Like there's corners everywhere.
It's nonstop. So that I totally applaud, and I don't want to take that away from him. And I am glad to see another Grand Prix winner on the grid, but
you'd prefer Vettel to have won.
Well, I mean, I would have preferred many other drivers to win. Like, I didn't really want Ocon to win a Grand Prix because I was a bit like, having the year he's had, I don't think it's
deserved.
Gasly winning at Monza, it was coming. We all wanted it. Yeah. It was there. There was all the potential. Perez winning at Bahrain, you know, like all this, that was always coming. You always want Ocon. It's a bit like, well, you just kind of lucked into that a bit.
Yeah, right? But
but I'm just going in.
Did you? I kind of agreed with you up until you saw him, and then you realized how much it meant to him.
Oh, and, no doubt.
And then like everything just came rushing back to be like, oh, I'm actually really happy for him. And then I started to see everything on social media, and I was like, oh, this is actually really cool. I'm really happy that we saw that. Because I do agree. I think it was more deserved for Vettel to win, considering the results that he's had previously. He's almost looking like, in some races, he can be top five and has actually got there. But imagine if he had overtaken Ocon. And then all of this would have come out with the disqualification. Can you imagine?
So that's what I wanted to come on to a little bit, actually. So yeah, so we'll part the Ocon thing, as I say. It is good for him. And it's great to have another Grand Prix winner. And we've got to remember his era at Racing Point. Remember that thing with Verstappen at Brazil, which I wanted to come in on a conspiracy theory on. But anyway, you know, he was a great talent then. It's only been the last couple of years that he's faded away a bit. So hey, maybe this is the start.
Payroll?
No, I think he's on the Mercedes payroll. Because I remember that huge fight in the pit lane.
He is, isn't he?
Actually, he is. That's my whole point. Conspiracy. So, Vettel, yes. So, firstly, do you remember the preseason show that we did of this series? My prediction was that Vettel would win a race for Aston Martin. Maybe that was on the main podcast. At some point, I've said, I think Vettel will win a Grand Prix for Aston Martin. That was my rogue out there prediction. So, there was a part of me that was like, please,
why didn't I put money on this?
But for all the reasons we've discussed in previous episodes, we want Vettel and Aston Martin to do well. Mm. We want that story to be a good story.
Because we want Lawrence Stroll as a sponsor.
You want Lawrence Stroll as a sponsor. I'm still slightly nervous that he'll come in here and boss us around and be terrifying. But yeah, obviously we had the podium in Baku, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sebs. And then we've seen Monaco did well.
Yeah.
So he's been coming and coming and coming, and it's becoming a good story. And he's feeding bees in Austria and clearing up rubbish in Silverstone and just being a wonderful human being and fighting for LGBTQ plus in Hungary. You know, he's just being a wonderful human being and then starting to deliver on track. So I was there just going, please. Like, I just want this to happen so badly for Vettel. But then, yes, so what has now transpired is a stupid technicality that there wasn't enough fuel in the car for the FIA to measure. It needs to be a litre, and it was under that. And then they also have to sort of count, you know, the lap back to the grid or to the pit, which he didn't even complete. So disqualified, straight out disqualified.
As Tony would say, rules are rules.
Rules are rules, black and white, black and white.
That's the rule.
And you're so right. If he had overtaken Ocon and then we'd had this, it would have been...
Yeah, it would have meltdown.
But also, Formula One once again shooting themselves in the foot, right? One of the most exciting races we've had in years, most exciting races of the season. Great story for Formula One, new and up-and-coming talent. Great story for Aston Martin. Bottas, start of the race, plows into half the field, takes out title contenders, teammates, like just five-place grid penalty at the next race.
Yeah.
Vettel, tiny bit less fuel at the end of the thing. Disqualified.
Out.
And that's Formula One. And I know, I agree, black and white, rules are rules. They used too much fuel during the race, whatever, or they underfilled it, whatever you say. But seemed extreme. And they've got to be careful with where they see leniency. But stuff like that with Formula One does still...
Do you know what it is? I think the fuel is black and white. Mm-hmm. And obviously what we've seen over the season is Race Direct has become a lot more strict with the way they deliver penalties. Whether they actually deliver strict penalties or not, they're coming out and dishing 5-second penalties out as if it's like a game show. I feel like the black and white of Vettel being disqualified, I just feel like the five-place grid penalty obviously is up for debate, and they decided on that's what it was going to be. It just makes Vettel look really harsh because...
It makes it look very, very harsh, you know, because there's such a sort of good energy around him and that team at the minute. We wanted that success story, and to be disqualified on such a technicality felt brutal.
Maybe that's just us as fans and our psychology.
Oh, for sure.
Because they look at it from a subjective point of view, and they'll look at the rules and they'll go, well, this is what he did. This is what he did. He didn't do this. He did that. He didn't do this. Therefore, here's the...
And if you're underfueling a car, even by 400 milliliters or whatever like that, maybe that's a pace advantage. Maybe he wouldn't have been second. We all know he wouldn't have. But you know what I mean? Like I get it. I totally get it. But it's Formula One. They're gaining this huge audience from Netflix. Yeah. The Schumacher documentary is going to spike that once again. They've got to make these situations a little bit simpler. They've got to be able to...
A little bit like watching a football game and... Oh, it's offside. Yeah, he was offside.
Or during the race, some kind of thing that's saying Vettel running on the borderline of the fuel, there's a chance that he's going to, so that we can follow. So we don't finish the race going, what a race! And then half an hour, 2 hours later, you're like, what? Why is he disqualified? So, unbelievable race. And I say, it brings us to the half point of the season. We now got the summer shutdown. We'll be back for Spa, I think, at the end of the summer. It must be Spa, usually. And then it's Dutch Grand Prix.
End of August.
Yeah, perfect. What I thought we would do before we go off into our summer break is very quickly...
Not having a summer break. I mean, the podcast is having a summer break.
Yes, the podcast is having a big summer break, actually. But, we continue working. great.
I wish we had a summer break.
But the... traditional format of this series, or at least it was for the first sort of five or six races, was to do sort of review the finishing order in reverse order. So we'd go from 20th to first and talk about each driver's race. But then as this sort of, season has got more and more insane and races got more and more insane, we scrapped that and just talked about all the action. But I thought we would go back to that old formula today and basically give each driver a mark out of 10 for their season so far.
Okay.
I don't want to debate it too much because we'll be here for another 3 hours.
Yeah.
So just a sort of relatively quick, and we're going to have to... Because of the Hungarian result, we got to measure ourselves here a bit. We can't start giving out 8s and 9s like at the start. Because, 20th position. There you go. So Vettel officially last in the Hungarian order. So what would you give old Seb out of 10 for his season so far?
7.5.
Yeah, I was going to say 7. I think 7, 7.5. He's improving.
He's exerted some performance out of that car. Maybe more so than Stroll.
Couple of mistakes still.
Yeah.
Slow start to the year, but yeah, he's getting there. So yeah, then his teammate, Stroll.
6.5.
Yeah. You're 0.5. You love a 0.5.
Yeah. Just sitting in the middle.
Mm. Yeah, 6 from Stroll. Don't think he's done anything mental, but no, he's been there. About.
He's proved himself.
Charles Leclerc.
Proved himself. Charles Leclerc. Do you know what this? It'll be more fun for me to guess what your ratings are, because I reckon you've gone it in a
9.5. I think he's outperforming the car.
Yeah,
he's made some mistakes. We've seen him make some mistakes, most notably at Monaco. He's now behind Sainz in the championship table.
Yeah,
I think pretty telling. I think he's had a lot of bad luck this year.
Yeah.
But I think he's doing a solid job.
Yeah, so I'd agree.
9.5 for him. Sergio Perez.
Good question. I'd say that he has probably performed better. I wouldn't necessarily say more consistent than previous number two Red Bull drivers. 6.5.
Yeah, I'm going to say six. I think it's so weird to say, hey, he's won a race and a couple of podiums now.
He's been up there.
There's still a question, isn't there? He's still not doing, and they're still talking about the Red Bull seat next year.
Yeah, yeah.
Could it be Gasly?
Yeah.
Or could they steal Russell away? Because like, it's not a surefire bet. He's not done enough still yet.
He's not played the part that Red Bull want him to.
Apart from 1.5 races, maybe?
Yeah.
So it's such a shocking thing to say, but he's got to do more.
But it's such a hard seat. Because all he's doing is creating a barrier around Max to try and win the championship.
It's not a hard seat if you're always second to Max.
Yeah.
Which we're going to come to Bottas in 2 seconds. Up until this year, that's what he did.
Mm. He did a really good job of it.
Did a fantastic job of just always being second.
Yeah.
Or P2 or on pole.
Yeah.
Perez, that's not what he's doing.
Yeah.
So Bottas then, officially P16th.
3.
I think he's having a shocker. I think he's having arguably his worst season for Mercedes.
Mm.
I think he's having an absolute shocker.
3 is harsh, though.
3 is harsh, but...
I was going in at 5 because I'd probably rate, if I was in a Formula One car, like a 3.
You would get a 3. You'd get a 0.00001.
Why?
Because you'd be 25 seconds off the pace.
Per lap.
So would I. I'm not saying I'd be any better. Lando Norris.
Ooh, Lando, 8.5.
I'm going to say 9.
9?
I'm going to say 9. Yeah. I don't. The problem which we've got with Lando is we don't know if he's outperforming the car. Mm. That could be that car's performance. Danny Ric, unfortunately.
He's off it.
So Lando, his consistency, insane.
Yeah.
Podiums. Pulled out some results. Why have I not given him a 9.5 like Charlie Leclerc? Why have I not given him a 10? Because, I don't know, just because. I think there's another level he could go.
I think you're right. I think there's a little question mark over where can he go? We haven't seen the peak of him yet.
Mazepin?
Fairly non-event. Somewhere between 4. I was going to say between 3 and 5.
Yeah, a 3. I can't rate him higher than Bottas. That would just be really awful.
I mean, I would
even give him a 2.
Would you?
He's finishing most races 20 seconds behind his teammate.
Yeah.
I mean, that's bad.
I'm being kind to him because of his dad.
Your backup sponsor if Stroll never comes through. Giovinazzi.
See, I just feel like we miss a hell of a lot of coverage from him. I feel like we see a lot of Raikkonen, but I feel like Giovinazzi has done some pretty decent Saturdays. 5.
I was 5.
Yeah.
Mick Schumacher?
I mean, you're going to give him a 12.
Yeah, 5 or 6, I would say.
Okay,
he's not going to get 12. 5 or 6, I mean, so, you know, I'll give him a 5.5. Then, you know, he's still making mistakes. But Hungary was a 12. Hungary was a 12. But as a season, 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Danny Rick.
But the thing is,
no one wants to score him lowly.
I feel like his race pace isn't bad in comparative to his qualifying. I feel like his sort of like 95 to 100% isn't there. But I feel like, obviously, he's not as supportive to Lando as McLaren would like. I'd probably give him a 6. 5 or 6. What have you given him? Like a 1?
3.5.
3.5.
I think he's having a shocker.
I mean,
I think he's having a shocker.
I'd go back and watch some of the Formula Ones that we've seen this season. He's not having a great season. But he's not having a shocker.
I think he's having a shocker. Kimi Raikkonen?
4. 4. Yeah, 4. Get out.
I'll give him a 5.
Okay. Do you know what? There was a part of me in that race where I was like, just give the seat to a younger driver. Give them a chance. Just retire.
He's just scored a point.
Yeah, but just go and enjoy some retired life with your family. They come to every race week. Do you really think his wife wants to do that with the kids? Probably.
Max Verstappen.
Oh, 9.2. The reason why I'm not giving, I was thinking 9.5 initially, but 9.2.
I think he's got to have a 10, hasn't he? What's he really done wrong? Okay, Silverstone, I'm not going to say he did wrong.
No.
What's he done wrong?
True.
I think he's got to have a 10 for this point of the season. He's been impeccable.
I'll stand with a 9.2.
Okay, so rogue. I'm not sure why I'm allowing that. But anyway. Georgie
Russell.
I think a lot of people watching or listening to this will probably score him higher than what I probably will. I'm going to say 7.
Yeah, I would say on a Saturday, 9 or 10. Yeah, yeah. Saturday, 9 or 10. Sunday.
The thing is, up until this weekend that we've just had, he's been in the points for the majority of the race and not delivered that final, whether it's the car's fault, the strategy, for whatever reason, you kind of, that's why I'm not giving him an 8 or an 8.5, which could also be a fair score for him. So yeah, I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah, 7. I'd say 8. 7 or 8. Yeah. Fine. Latifi?
Oh, 10. What a guy. No, in all seriousness, 6.
Yeah, 5 or 6. I think, you know, he's closer to George this year for sure. Yeah. So 5 or 6. Tsunoda.
I would say the hope, if we were to get, like, I would want him to be at an 8, making those lunges, like pushing Gasly, but he's just not been there. So 5.5.
Yeah, 6. Yeah, okay. I think similar kind of, I mean, we're same mentality, I think 6.
I'm just going for those halves.
Yeah, I know, he's love a half. No, but I know sometimes it feels like it needs a half.
Yeah.
Pierre Gasly?
Pierre Gasly, I would say 7.
I was going to go puncher. I was going to go 8.5, but that feels a bit too strong. Has he had a podium this year, Gasly? No.
Not too sure.
I think he's had a podium this year. Has he?
He's been close. Gasly. If he hasn't got one, he's been close. I feel like I've seen.
Let's check. Formula One race results. Pierre Gasly. Bahrain car. Where's the position? 17th, 8th, 6th. Oh, 3rd. Azerbaijan, sorry.
Okay.
Azerbaijan.
Oh, yeah, that was a mental race.
Mental race. A race that even Lewis Hamilton forgot because he said to Seb Vettel, he goes, great to see Aston Martin, their best ever result so far. No, that race when you binned it at the end. Yeah, they were on the podium, mate. Fernando Alonso, Jimmy Alfonso.
Up until this race weekend, 6.5.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
6.5. I probably wouldn't even. Alonso, 6. Ocon 6.5.
Okay, well that means we don't have to do Ocon later. So. I basically agree with you. I think I'd actually put them both at 6.
Okay.
I think Ocon's had a bit of a dodgy year, which was part of my frustration around the victory.
Yeah.
So I put them both at 6. Carlos Sainz.
I think he's coming to the team well. I think he's drove that car well, and obviously now he's outscoring Leclerc. What did I give Leclerc?
I don't think you said, did you? You just
eight,
went
eight
on
and a half.
Me.
Yeah. 8.5. Signs, 9.
Eight, yeah, eight and I'd say 8.5. He's made a couple of mistakes. He's made a couple of mistakes here and there.
Yeah.
You know, obviously hungry and qualifying, but made up for it with a late
podium. I think he's shown that he not only deserves that drive, but I think he's also shown that he is a Ferrari driver.
100%.
And I think when it was announced that he was going from, I was like, he's not a Ferrari driver. I don't understand Ferrari's direction. They always need someone that has that pull. And I feel like he has not only equaled, but even bettered Charles Leclerc.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I will always say this. I don't think the points table reflects.
Yeah.
But he's doing an incredible job. Mm. And you're right. I think a lot of people didn't realize just how good he was going to be.
Yeah.
So yeah, 8.5 for sure. And then Lewis Hamilton. How do we feel like the defending champ has been doing?
8.5?
Yeah, I was going to go 9. I think...
And I think Max has pushed that score down from what it could be.
I think there's been Imola going off into the gravel, the incident at Baku with the magic brakes, Austria, he went backwards because of... Damn, what was the Austria thing? Why did he go backwards to Austria?
Oh, he had underfloor damage because he went over the sausage curbs.
So there have just been a handful of things which are uncharacteristic for Lewis, which, you know, your 8.5 isn't, you know, I think, yeah, somewhere around there. So long story short, the clear winner of the first half of the season, Max Verstappen.
I thought you were going to say Mick Schumacher.
And Charles Leclerc, promote them both.
I think Max has come out. I think he's gone off from last season, and I think he's seen the opportunity that Red Bull have, and he has fully grabbed it with two hands and is bringing the fight to Merck. It's not like, there have been many times in qualifying and in the race where usually I'd say there's still a chance Lewis is going to get this, or I'm pretty sure in the second run on Q3, Lewis is going to out-qualify Max, where I've just not had that faith, and I've just known that Max is faster.
Which has made it a super exciting first half of the 2021 F1 season. We will be back with you post-Spa to pick up on, the drama. Let's fingers crossed the drama continues. And let's see if Lewis can raise his game up to a 10 out of 10, push Max all the way, or vice versa, because that's what we want to see. We hope you've enjoyed following the drama via our the chicken flag. Make sure you're subscribing and turn on notifications so you don't miss those future episodes. Of course, the regular weekly episodes with Tony do continue. This week, Paul actually doorstepped us because he got the timing wrong for this recording incorrectly. So on Thursday, Paul's part of the main episode. Tough luck. But yeah, we will be back, as I say, in September. Until then, like us, let's all hope we can get through the next few weeks with no Formula One action. I'm just going to watch a lot of it on YouTube. So yeah, see you in a few weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.